Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on likelihoods when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of the population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of the income tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. Now, in 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at every level. This year, the average American family will have to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough money to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when we compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. So what does that make us today? Now, this income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, and they violate eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. Now, this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and the Social Security tax is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, tax and status, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, and just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the Money Changer for January 2009. Money Changer, put out by Franklin Sanders, lead article called Likelihoods. Last time we took a look at a strange term that Franklin has coined. It's called discontinuities. Discontinuities. What's likely to happen and what isn't likely? For instance, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and the Great Depression were all discontinuities. Those are things that aren't likely to continue on. They're not likely to occur. When they do occur, it changes society, it changes you, it changes me, it changes institutions, it changes government. It's big. It's like the sinking of the Titanic. But it's not very likely. It's not the kind of thing that you would want to bet on. But you should be prepared for. So he writes this story called Likelihoods. So I said, well, now that kind of makes sense. Now, there's an old proverb in the book of Proverbs in the Bible, and it says that there is safety in a multitude of counsel. safety in a multitude of counsel. So, following that principle of law, that principle of just good common sense, I like to get other people's input. What do you think is going to happen? That's why I subscribe to a lot of these newsletters, because it gives me a different perspective. Everybody sees things differently. And if I were to follow one guy, well, he would probably lead me astray. But if I follow four guys, maybe I can get led astray in four different directions. That's a wild new thought, isn't it? Now, nobody sees everything exactly the way you do. And you don't see things exactly the way somebody else does. But does that mean that nobody else has any valuable information because they don't agree with you? I think that's an error. Other people have viewpoints also, perspectives. And their perspectives met with your perspectives and then with somebody else's. You know, pretty soon, depending upon your circumstance, where you're at, and what you're looking for, what your goals and ambitions are, might be able to add to your standard of living. Now, I pointed out last time we had a power outage here. Now, let me point out a discontinuity. Have you ever heard of the Carrington event? Carrington, named after Lord Carrington. Well, Lord Carrington was an astronomer. In 1859, he was looking at the sun through his instruments. And an event transpired. It's called a solar flare. And when this event transpired, the solar flare, it gave rise to an aurora borealis, commonly known as the Northern Lights, which was so powerful that it could be seen as far south as Cuba and Jamaica. Boy, that's a powerful solar flare. But it also set off forest fires. It melted transformers, little transformers that they used, you know, to transmit Western Union telegraph messages. It didn't knock out the power grid because there was no power grid to knock out, but in 1989 it did. There was a solar flare in 1989 that knocked out the entire power grid in Quebec, Canada. Now, these solar flares occur on 11-year cycles. 11-year cycles. And the next one is due to occur about 2012, I believe it is, 1989. 2000, and then 2011-12 is about the next one. Now, the strongest solar flare ever recorded in the history of mankind occurred in 1859. And it's called the Carrington Event. If that event were to occur today, NASA, that's the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, believes that it will knock out the entire power grid of the United States. Indeed, it will knock out the entire power grid anywhere the solar flare exerts its energy. It'll knock out satellites. It'll kill astronauts in space. It will start forest fires. It will shut down your electric power. It will shut off the water to your toilet. That's how powerful that thing's going to be, if it occurs. Now, Franklin Sanders calls this a discontinuity, not very likely to occur. It has occurred in the past. We've had similar events since then. And it's not likely to occur in the future, but it could. It's kind of like an airplane crash I mentioned in the last program. I said, you know, every time I get on an airplane, it always goes through my mind, this may be my last flight. Airplanes crash. And when airliners crash, typically everybody on board dies. That's typical. Once in a while there's a survivor or two, and you might be that one or two or 10 or 15. And an airliner just crashed in the Hudson River here not too long back, January 15th, I believe it was. And everybody on board walked off. Now, that's news. That was newsworthy. That's very rare. That's a discontinuity. It doesn't occur very often. It isn't something that a passenger getting on an airliner can prepare for. Just isn't in the cards. So discontinuities are not the kinds of things that you want to waste a lot of your resources on, and that's Franklin Sanders' main point. He says, you know, you cannot prepare for every detail of every potential event that could occur because you don't have enough resources. So preparing for these discontinuities is typically a waste of your time, effort, and energy, although they might want to be in your planning. So I planned for this one. I'll tell you why I did that. I can't prevent these solar flares, nor can I guarantee that I'm going to have electric power during this period of a Carrington event. But because the power system, the power grid in the United States, has not been added to or kept up correctly over the past 30, 40, or 50 years, we've let our infrastructure go down. And it's very fragile. They have to work hard every summer to keep the power on in California. It takes a lot of work to keep our power grid working. And so I looked at that and I said, you know, it just seems to me that as weak and as poorly designed as our power system is, as poorly maintained as it is, it's likely that it'll go down. And they've estimated that if it goes down, it'll take 30 days to get it back up and running. Have you ever lived 30 days without power? I never have. I have never lived 30 days without power. I've done 5 days without power twice. Boy, is that inconvenient. Boy, does that slow down the pace of life when you don't have electric power. Now, it's not life-threatening. It isn't going to kill you. But boy, it just really disrupts your way of life. That's what it does. And so I prepared for it, but I didn't buy a generator to prepare for it. I bought a bunch of candles to make sure that I've got light so I can read, so that we can sit down at the dinner table. So for 5 days, we had candlelight dinners on our dinner table. But we ate every day, just like we always do. We have a gas stove to cook with, so that electric power didn't knock out our cooking ability. We had heat. We don't heat with electric. We heat with wood. So we had wood heat, which is what we always have. We had gas-fired or gas-cooked meals, which we always have. It was the electric lights. It was the pump that pumps our water. That's what we didn't have. So I thought, well, you know, the thing to do is to prepare for that. Well, how do you prepare for the collapse of your power service? Last time it happened to us, it was with an ice storm. First time was with an ice storm. The most likely thing that's going to knock out our power is an ice storm. How often do they occur? Well, 1988 and 2009. That's how often they occur right here where I'm at. And probably, 25 years before that. So about every, 20 years or so, we have an ice storm comes through here, knocks the power out for 5 days. It's not 30 days. It's not 365 days. But it's an event that you ought to be prepared for. And so I plugged it into my preparations. And so I've got some boxes of candles in the event that it happens again. Candles are cheap. I didn't plan on putting my generator in to solve that problem, although I do have a generator out here. And I would like to have it hooked up. And I wouldn't mind spending the money on the gas for 3, 4, or 5 days. It would probably make life a lot better for me. But I'm not going to go out and buy another generator. Now, Franklin Sanders is of the same opinion. Now, he puts a section in here called inflation versus deflation. And I mentioned to you last time that we haven't had deflation, but that's what the government's selling us right now. They're selling us deflation so that they can sell the stimulus package. And so I said, as an old-time econ man, I wonder who's making the money on this deal. Because there hasn't been any deflation. None. Zero deflation. But that's what they're telling us. And what they did was they said, look, the commodity prices have just collapsed. A guy told me the other day, he says, my God, look at the price of gold, how it's deflating. Get rid of your gold today. Well, let's just take a look at gold, because in 2000, the price of gold was about $275 an ounce. Today, as I speak, it's about $900 an ounce. In March of 2008, it hit $1,022. It is true that the price of gold has deflated from $1,022 to $900. And that's what the powers that be, that's what our government is telling us. See? Look at this deflation. We got to have a stimulus package. Excuse me here, kids, but looks like to me that there is zero deflation here. Zero. And that's because at the very bottom, gold was 275, and then it went up to 1,022, and then it dropped back to 900. So if we were to go to $300, just to round it off in 2000, the price of gold today is three times higher than it was in 2000. That's not deflation, that's inflation. It's inflated by three times. So what they're telling you is that from its all-time high, it has deflated. That's true. But from its all-time low, it has inflated. The price of gasoline, when this thing got started with the Bush years, was about $1 a gallon, went up to $4 a gallon, dropped to $2 a gallon, and now they're telling us we're suffering from deflation. No, no. The price of gasoline has doubled over the last 8 years. The price of copper went from 80 cents to 350, and then back down to $1.60. The price of copper today is double what it was in 2000. The price of copper has not deflated. It has inflated by double. Now that tells me that I should be preparing for inflation, not deflation. In fact, I can't think of anything that has deflated. And your government today has doubled the money supply. That means that the value of the money that was in circulation in August of 2008 has now depreciated by half. You haven't seen that on the shelves yet, but you will. That'll be about 6 to 24 months from now. Now, as a result of that, I need to be making plans for the future. So, do I want to save a lot of $100 bills under my mattress? Or should I convert the $100 bills into gold and then convert the gold to $100 bills when I want to buy something 24 months from now? And after all, that's what we're talking about here with preparation, or with, as Franklin calls it, likelihoods. Likelihoods. What's the likelihood that the stocks and bonds that you're buying today will be worth more in purchasing power a year, 5 years, or 10 years from now? If you go out today and spend $100 and buy a 30-year maturing government bond, what's the chances 30 years from now you're going to have more purchasing power than you have today? Those are the kinds of decisions that everybody has to make. And when we make those decisions, it's going to impact upon our standard of living. How well do you live? How many ice cream cones do you have? Now, in looking at the prices today, I can remember when I was a youngster, 6 years old, my granddad worked at Northern Redwood Lumber Company, and he got paid $1.75 an hour. And when he gave me one silver dime, one 10-cent piece, I could go down to the ice cream store, put it on the counter, and they would give me a double-decker strawberry ice cream cone. Two scoops, 10 cents. The other day I went into TCBY and I got two scoops and a cup for $2.35. 23.5 times more for those two scoops today than it was in 1945. So, did my wages go up 23.5 times? Because that's what I needed. I needed $1.75, that is 1.75, times, and I needed 23.5. So I need to be making $41.12 an hour, $41.12, in order to have the same purchasing power that I had back in 1945. But I noted that the average salary now, or the average wage, is $17.58, less than half. Uh-oh. I'm not maintaining my standard of living. And after all, that's the point of economics, likelihoods. What is likely to occur in the future as opposed to what actually does occur or has occurred? Let's take on inflation here. Franklin Sanders says what the crisis is not is deflation. Deflation is a decrease in the money supply. It is not a drop in prices, although it can, and usually does, cause prices to drop. But then so can a lot of other things. The price of apples can fall because orchardists plant thousands of new acres. The price of computers can fall because technology improves. The price of houses can fall because artificial demand created by easy mortgage money evaporates when the mortgage money suddenly dries up. And yet a multitude, if not a majority, of economists and analysts see prices dropping, and they imagine that we are still in 1934. But we are not in 1934. So what has changed? Well, what's changed is the banking system has changed. It is no longer required to hold 35% of its reserves in gold in the bank, or any reserves at all, 0.7%, or thereabouts, is all that banks are required to hold today, less than 1%. The monetary system, gold, no longer forms any substantial part of it, nor silver. The money has no substance at all, in fact. The entire world is on a fiat money system with floating exchange rates. Central banks can create as much money as they want to. Unlimited money. The economy and government, they are now wholly fascist. They are now engaged in a partnership of big government and big business. And since the Great Depression, a vast multitude of institutions and government programs, from unemployment insurance to welfare, to the Full Employment Act of 1948, to, lately, bank bailouts, has been created with one single purpose, and that is to inflate. All of these automatic circuit breakers have been built into the economy because there is one enemy that the establishment cannot conquer, one enemy that the establishment fears, the enemy that it faced in the 1930s. The enemy is deflation. It terrifies the bankers. So the problem facing managers today and facing us today is not at all the same as it was in 1934. Deflation is not a problem since central banks can create unlimited amounts of money. So as Helicopter Ben Bernanke has been demonstrating in new and creative ways, even banks refusing to lend causes him to sweat. He just in-runs around them with a new facility, and he does it about every week. Never forget this. The Fed and the government have two and only two weapons, inflation and Blarney. Inflation, you know, Blarney is the whole barnyard of propaganda measures aimed at keeping the public from panicking, from trotting out the president to assure TV viewers that everything is all right, to trotting out Warren Buffett. Blarney, blarney, and more blarney. And don't forget this. They will use those weapons because they are their power. And they will cling to these weapons of power to the bitter end. And over the past 12 months, the Federal Reserve and the government have shown abundantly to the tune of $8.5 trillion in new credit and bailouts that they will use the inflation gun, the Blarney gun, I no longer keep up with, having a low tolerance for hogwash. But you can see it every night on TV. Now, given all of these things are so, what's the most likely outcome? Slow burn or collapse? Or continuing inertia or discontinuity? Now, the next headline is inflation. The inflation was. It already happened. Remember, inflation isn't rising prices. Inflation is an increase in the money supply. And the Fed and the government have already created $8.5 trillion in bailouts and added $1 trillion to the Fed's balance sheet. The inflation has already been accomplished. It's already a done deal. It's been done over the last 4 months. Now all we're waiting for is the results of it. And every cent of that money may not be inflationary. But what's the difference? With Obama sidling up to spend another $1 trillion and two wars being waged, what's the difference? Well, the inflation has been done, and more of it is going to be done. And on this scale of magnitude, greater or less, makes no more difference to us than the magneton output of little boy, or the megaton output of little boy made to the people in Hiroshima that it landed on in 1945. Inflation, which is increasing the money supply, causes prices to rise. So big prices and big price rises, also known as big dollar depreciation, is not merely a likelihood, but it is a virtual certainty. The inflation has already occurred, but it's going to take 6 to 24 months to express itself in rising prices. So let's forget deflation. That's a scare. The Fed encourages that scare so that it can manage inflation expectations. All right, so two men come over to Franklin Sanders and they say, well, what do you think's going to happen? Deflation or inflation? I hear this deflation thing going on constantly, and people are saying, my God, the price of gasoline has dropped in half. Boys and girls, deflation isn't bad for you and me. Deflation is good for you and me. When the price of gasoline was $4 a gallon, that was bad for us. When the price of gasoline goes from $4 to $2, that's good for us. It's bad for the oil companies. It's bad for the oil sheiks. It's bad for Exxon. It's bad for government tax and revenue. It's bad for bankers and speculators. It's not bad for you and me. Depends on which side of the counter you're on here. Now, back in 1836, we had a president, Andrew Jackson, who vetoed the National Bank Act. And they came to him and they said, if you don't sign this National Bank Act, there is going to be god-awful disruptions in the economy. And thousands of people are going to end up unemployed. And it's going to be a national catastrophe. And the president said, I agree. I think you're right. But he said, if I don't act, and if I give you what you want, it's going to ruin 10 times more people. And it's going to be even worse. So I'm going to do the unpopular thing. I'm going to veto the Bank Act. Now, the correct thing for President Bush to have done when Henry Paulson came in and said, hey, listen, we got to have this stimulus package, if the president had said, well, not on my watch. We're not going to saddle the people of America with $800 billion. We are not going to give a great big fat plum to the banking industry, which has caused this problem. He might have been doing us a favor. He didn't, and he gave the banks a great big $800 billion plum. And by God, if I was a banker, I'd love Bush and I would love Obama. After all, I would love it if you gave me a great big fat plum. But who was it that had to give up their plum in order to give that plum? And it was the taxpayers for years and years to come. And they didn't take just one plum, they're going to take four. Because every plum that you give to the bankers today, you're going to have to pay back with four plums. Because see, the bankers all charge interest. So you're going to give the bankers a plum today and three more plums in the future. And after all, those are the people that caused the problem to start with. The people who caused the problem back in 1836 were the bankers. And President Jackson said, we're not going to reward incompetence. What we're going to do is punish incompetence and take your charter away, which is what he did. Okay, now that isn't going to happen this time around. How do I know that? Because it's already a done deal. It didn't happen with Bush, and Mr. Obama is out busily trying to push another $800 billion stimulus package. Now, the last stimulus package didn't work, and I don't have much confidence for the next one. But you see, people out there, people want somebody to do something. That's what happens when the power goes out. Now, see, when our power went out here, I didn't call the power company and report to them that the power went out. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but see, here's the way I saw that. See, I could look out from my place over to the neighbor, over at Dale Smith's, and he didn't have any lights on, so I figured his power's out. I looked over at Uchman's, and I couldn't see any lights burning over at the Uchman place, and I figured if Don and Dale didn't have power, and I don't have power, that it isn't just a phenomenon with my transformer. That more than likely, theirs is out also. And since we had an ice storm here, I figured, yeah, it's probably the ice. So I never did call the power company, and my power went on after 5 days. I looked out and I saw Dale's power was on. I saw lights over at the Smith place. I looked over at the Uchman place. There's power. And I always figured that people, you know, when they run out of power, they're going to call the power company. Now, I want to tell you that our power here is all on automatic. If the power goes off here, it lights up a red light on the control panel over in Branson, Missouri. That's right. If the Gordon Farm, for some reason, goes off power, they know it right away. In fact, I lost power here one time. I had a building over here that was collapsing, and as the building sank into the ground, collapsing, it was affecting a strain on a power meter, and pretty soon that strain pulled the wire loose in the power meter, and we lost power up at one of our barns, and I didn't notice it down here at the house, but one of the hired men came in and said, hey, we haven't got any power up there at the barn. And so I said, well, let me go up and look. And so I went up to the barn and I looked. And so sure enough, there wasn't any power. So I came back and I called the power company and I said, hey, listen, I got a barn up here and got no power. And as a result of that, could you send somebody out? Because we think it's in the meter. And so the lady said, oh, yes, Mr. Gordon, I see it right here on the control board. Your meter number blah, blah, blah is out, and we'll send somebody right out. And they did. They sent somebody out, and they fixed it. So I just wanted to point that out to you, that that the power company is typically right on top of things, you know, and they know what's coming down. So I really don't need to prepare for that. And that's what Franklin Sanders is pointing out, and I think he's done a very admirable job here of pointing out this thing of discontinuity. Don't waste your time preparing for things that ain't likely to happen. Prepare for things that have already happened or are likely to happen. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Just call us and ask for one. That number again is 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, where you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the Money Changer, the January issue. If you'd like to get a copy, why don't you call the Money Changer at 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. We're looking at likelihoods. This is the January 2009 edition of the Money Changer newsletter. Now, I subscribe and I recommend it because of the unique quality and insight that Franklin Sanders brings to the table. You may not agree with all of his opinions and views and points and one thing and another, and I certainly don't. But I got to tell you that he has something well worth listening to. It's well worth the money spent. And I recommend 3 newsletters: the International Forecaster, the Privateer, and the Money Changer. I think that if you subscribe to those 3, you'll have your feet on the ground. That's my view. If you're subscribing to USA Today and watching Katie Couric and Brian Williams, and maybe you're getting U.S. News and World Report, I don't think that you're getting all of the information that you need. I watch the Lehrer News Hour. I watch Katie from time to time, Brian. I subscribe to other newspapers, newsletters, and so on. And there's the Main Street Press, And there's the underground press. This is what we call the underground press, the money changer, to give us the other side of the coin. Now, what we're hearing out here is deflation, deflation, deflation. Most people believe that we're in a deflationary spiral and that the world's coming to an end and that we need a stimulus package. So, as I pointed out in the last two programs, there is no deflation. Now, the price of copper in 2000 was 80 cents a pound. Today, it's $1.60 or thereabouts. And the price of copper is doubled in price. In 2000, the price of gasoline was $1 a gallon. Today, it's $2 a gallon. It has doubled in price. What the bankers and government agents are pointing out to us is that the price of gasoline was $4 and dropped to $2. That's deflation. And that the price of copper was $3.50 and now it's dropped to $1.50. That's deflation. And they've got a point. They ran the price up, doubled, then cut it down by 50% and told us that it's deflating and we need a monetary stimulus. Now, the price of gold, for instance, has tripled in price over the past 8 years. It went down by about 10% over the past year from its all-time high, but the price of gold is three times what it was in 2000. So if we take a look at perspective here, there isn't anything that's deflated. What is going on is inflation, and the inflation is now accelerating. And we're going to have god-awful inflation in the future, guaranteed, without any doubt. And that inflation has already occurred. Inflation is an increase in the money supply. That's already happened. The results of that increase in the money supply takes about 6 to 24 months. That hasn't occurred yet, but it's coming. And that's what I'm preparing for, and that's what Sanders is pointing out. Now, let's take a look at the outcome of the dollar. What do you think is going to happen to your greenbacks? Well, there's no question how this gigantic inflation will affect the U.S. dollar. It will gut the dollar. And how much can we lose? Well, over the next 4 years, anywhere from 25% to everything, 100% through hyperinflation. Bernanke and company are like men in a sinking lifeboat. Right now, they're bailing so that the boat won't sink. Now, after they get the boat bailed out, they'll worry about fixing the sails. They'll worry about dealing with inflation after the crisis passes. The idea floated to let the Fed issue its own debt would be one way to soak money out of circulation. And I'm sure they're clever enough to invent many other ways, however feckless they may be. But inflation has been so enormous, it's hard to see how they will avoid its most terrible effects. My best guess is that the dollar will lose 50% of its purchasing power over the next 4 years. Okay? So 50% of your purchasing power. Let's say that you've got $100,000 in the bank today. Maybe it's in your 401k, maybe it's in your Kroger plan. But today, let's picture you with $100,000. Now, ask yourself, what can I buy today with my $100,000, assuming that I had it and I was going down to Walmart to spend it, or I'm going to buy a new car or something like that? What would I get for my $100,000? Now, 4 years from now, cut those expectations exactly in half. That's what Sanders sees. Okay? Actually, I see it worse than that. I see a hyperinflation, and I see the value of the dollar going to zero over the next 4 years. That's my take on it. So Sanders and I agree that the value of the dollar is going to go down. In fact, can you point to anybody who over the next 4 years expects the purchasing power of the dollar to go up. How many of you people out there think that the value of the dollars that you have in your IRA is actually going to be worth more? Or that the purchasing power, which today is $100,000, is going to buy $110,000, $20,000, or $130,000 worth of goods? See, if you're believing in deflation, then you believe that the value of the dollar is going to be going up and that the price of goods is going to be going down. Do you believe that? Because if you do, that's what you need to be preparing for, isn't it? Now, I don't know of anybody that's expecting that, including the mainstream press and all of the economists. They have wildly varying degrees of belief as to how bad the inflation is going to be. But if you double the money supply, then isn't that going to halve the value of the money you already have? All right, now that's a done deal, and that's already been accomplished. They've already doubled the money supply over the past 4 months. All we're going to do now over the next 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, 48 months is to wait for the result. And I think that the result is going to be a depreciation of dollars to zero, or very close thereto. Probably the eradication of the dollar and then a new currency to take its place, like the Amero or cashless society or something else. Now remember, this is the money changer. The money changer. The telephone number is 888-218-9226. Tell them you want a complimentary copy before you subscribe. I think that that's worth doing. I don't mind giving somebody a free CD or giving somebody a CD package. This may not be for you. I always tell people, school here may not be for you. Take our free CD package, take a look at it, weigh it, taste it, touch it, smell it. If you think it's for you, buy it, and if you don't, let it pass. It doesn't cost anything. And I think Sanders will do the same thing. I'm not here to sell his newsletter, per se. I'm just here to review it. And in the process of reviewing it, I thought I'd tell you, well, here's what I think about it. So that's his take on the outcome of the dollar. Now, the least likely, he says, is hyperinflation. All right, now, I'm going to underline that. Now, why don't you jot this down? Run in there and put this on your calendar. Gordon says over the next 48 months, he expects the dollar to hyperinflate to zero. Franklin Sanders said the least likely event is hyperinflation. What do you think? Sanders goes on to say, hyperinflation is the least likely outcome. In social upheaval, the destruction of a nation's currency equals a violent political revolution. The French revolutionary hyperinflation ended with Napoleon. The German hyperinflation of 1923 eventually brought Hitler to power. Thus, our establishment must favor the slow burn over a collapse. The one thing they don't want is a discontinuity, because in the turmoil they might lose control. Even if they are very arrogant, they are still very skillful and can afford to hire the best and brightest. They have, after all, been managing since 1913, so it would be a big mistake to underestimate these people. The other force working against collapse is social inertia. Every morning, 5 billion people wake up in the world, and the first thought that crosses their mind is not, what will I do when things fall apart today? But rather, they think, how will I keep things together today? Now, that inertia works for continuity, not discontinuity. And the continuity works or favors the U.S. dollar. So hyperinflation, that is, prices rising at 10% a month or more, is a possibility. But it is not the most likely outcome. So in our planning for self-protection, hyperinflation ought not to be the sole outcome that we foresee. Besides, most of our defensive planning will work well whether hyperinflation occurs or not. But just in case, I have prepared in this issue a long article examining hyperinflation and how to protect yourself from it. So read that article carefully and get the references that I mention and read, learn, mark, and inwardly digest them. All right, let's take a look at preparation for the next 4 years. From the government, you can expect no rational or workable remedies. Cut. Let me underline that. Tim Gaither, our Secretary of the Treasury, was on TV yesterday, and he gave us his views, and he gave us no workable remedies. He was very vague and ambiguous. President Obama has not mentioned one specific thing. And if he has, I haven't heard it yet. He has not mentioned one specific thing. He says we need a stimulus package. The stimulus package is going to produce 4 million jobs. Talk about vague and ambiguous. Where did he get the number 4 million from an $800 billion stimulus package? Does that mean that if we spent $1.6 trillion that we would get 8 million jobs? Or if we spent $400 billion, we would get 2 million new jobs? Where does he get his numbers and from what historical source? When has this ever worked before? What were the dates? What were the numbers? What were the outcomes? How much did the stimulus cost? And was it economically viable? Did it pay itself off over time? See, there's nothing concrete coming from government. And when I see Sanders say, from the government, you can expect no rational or workable remedies. The Obama regime has already signaled that it will follow the doomed Rooseveltian path of government spending to revive the economy. This only wastes and misdirects resources, and it makes economic performance worse. Not only did this not work for Roosevelt, it also made things worse, so that the 1937-38 stock market performed worse than the 1930 stock market, and the economy right along with it. Only World War II rescued the U.S. economy from the Great Depression. Therefore, you can expect much more inflation and much more economic distress with lower economic output. Unless a miracle happens, politicians suddenly become statesmen, or an outbreak of freedom occurs, the Fed abolishes itself, or common sense becomes epidemic in America, the next 4 years will be bleak. Okay? So Sanders doesn't see very much of a good future in the economy over the next 4 years. Oh, I think he underestimates this by at least 100%. I don't see anything good coming out of the economy for at least 8 years, and I base that upon the 1933 through 1941 period. Only, instead of doing what Roosevelt did so that we can have the same 8 years of failure, the Obama regime is multiplying it times four. I don't know if that means if you multiply the failures of 1933 to 1940 by four, you will get 32 years of bad results. I don't know that. This is totally uncharted territory. But for Franklin Sanders to think that 4 years is going to be bleak, that is optimism. That's boundless optimism, Franklin. God love you. I love your optimism. We're only going to have 4 years of bleak financial assessments. All right? Franklin goes on, he says, your choices boil down to two. It's protect your stream of revenue, also known as income, and buy gold and silver. Precious metals offer you protection against dollar depreciation. It is a hedge against inflation for whatever wealth you presently have. So I want to pause right there. For whatever wealth you presently have. Well, now, a lot of you people out there don't have any wealth at all. Many people who call here are just flat-ass broke. If you have some resources that you can convert to gold and silver, by all means do that. But many people that are calling here, I would guess probably most, hell, they've already lost everything in the stock market. Their house has already lost all of its equity. They're already unemployed. And maybe their unemployment insurance has run out. Those are the kinds of calls that I'm getting. I don't know about you, Frank, but... So, if that's the case, well then, stocks and other investments can't do this, and investments that promise to pay dollars in the future are simply guaranteed certificates of confiscation. So, as you're converting your money into United States savings bonds, those are certificates of confiscation. That's what I see. I can't see any dollar-denominated assets increasing your purchasing power. I can't even see them maintaining your purchasing power. Now, if you had gold over the past 8 years, 2008 was the poorest year of the 8 years. It only gained 5.6%. year over year. So if you had gold in January of 2008 measured against January of 2009, you only made 5.6%. And I cried over that, because if I make less than double in a year, I get disappointed. If you want to know what my view is, but I just wanted to tell you that 5.6% was something better than stocks and bonds in real estate during 2008. So you might want to tuck that one away in your heart. I know you've lost a lot of money in the stock market, so if you stay in the stock market, you can lose a lot more. If you want to stay in there and lose a lot more, that's the place to stay. You can't fail. It's a proven winner. If you want to save what you've got, you sell it today and you buy gold. Then in the future, over the next 4 years, when the dollar goes to zero, if you cash out your IRA or your Krogh plan and you pay the taxes and take the hit, whatever you got left, you can probably preserve that and add to it in gold and silver. But if you maintain your paper possessions, you'll probably end up with zero, or very close to it. Very close to it. All right, now remember, this is the Money Changer. The Money Changer phone number is 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. This is the January 2009 issue that we are reviewing, and I am reviewing the article on likelihood. What is the likelihood that this is going to occur? I think he hit the nail pretty well on the head. He's very optimistic. Very optimistic. Okay, I'm out of time again here, children, so we're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.